Welcome to the pulpit ministry of the Launce Baptist Church. Hi, this is Jerry Bishop, and I want to thank you for listening today. Here at Launce Baptist, we believe in proclaiming the glory of God, the wonderful good news of the gospel, the lordship of Christ, and the authority of Scripture over our lives. May the Lord bless you, and may you grow in the knowledge of Him today as you listen.
This is one of those chapters that it's been recommended to me, and I would recommend it to you, that you come back pretty often to this chapter to check yourself up. You're never going to be perfect. You aren't going to get all of this right. But we need to constantly look back and see how we should love, how important love should be to us. If nothing else, because Christ even said, the two most important commandments were what? To love God and to love others. So it's a pretty important thing to God that we know how to love and that we work this into our own lives. So this morning we looked at the fact that love is very important, that it's to be our motive in our actions, in our service. We're going to take tonight and, if you would, find something to write on, find something to write with. And it'll actually be more like a quiz than maybe a sermon. This will be good. I had to do this not too long ago, and I'm actually kind of stealing the idea. But this is good. Verses 4 through 7 are going to give us a picture of what love looks like. It's not exactly a definition of love. But someone who is loving, someone who has love, is going to look like these verses. Like the 15 things that are in these verses. So our quiz is going to have 15 questions. And the way it's going to work is that you will score yourself anywhere from 0 to 4. 4 being good, 0 being not so good. As in, like, I don't do that at all. And 4 would be, I do that really well. Which some of these you're definitely not going to be able to say that. Well, definitely when we get to like the pride stuff, like a proud person is going to be like, yeah, I do really well with that. I'm really humble. That doesn't make sense. So we're not going to get a perfect score. Some of us may take this and at the end think, wow, I'm pretty bad. Or you might be encouraged. Say, I did better now than I would have last week. Or I did better now than I would have a year ago. This may be an encouragement to see areas you've grown in. But we can know that there would be only one perfect score out of all of history. There's only one who walked this earth. That would be a 60, which 4, 15, 60. And that would be Christ himself. He was the only one. So by the end of the night, we have looked at this. And you will have been able to, for one thing, where it says, like, love suffers long, you will have had to have put your name there. Be like, does Steve suffer long? Does that always work? How well does that work? We know if we put Christ there, it works perfectly. Christ suffers long. Christ is kind. Christ does not envy. We know that works perfect. But we'll take a look at ourselves. And see how well we do. As this morning I said, love itself is a choice. It's not feelings. It's not something we respond with to people because they're nice to us, or because they make us happy, because they give us stuff. It is a choice. You choose to love someone. And you definitely have to choose. When you think of different sections where Christ tells us to love your enemies, you're not going to have warm fuzzies toward that guy who just cut you off in traffic, or that person who is making fun of you. But you're still to love them. So that is a choice. You choose to be self-sacrificial and to put that person ahead of you. So that is love. And that is going to pour itself out into this picture we'll look at tonight. In these four verses, I'll go ahead and read through them, and then we'll start. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up. Love does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Before we get started, why don't we go ahead and pray. Lord, I thank you for this opportunity to look at ourselves, to look at your word, to see where the differences are, to see where we don't measure up, to see where we've grown, to see what we need to be growing in. Lord, I thank you for the challenge of your word and for the strength you give for us to love. I thank you for the lesson that we can see here, that love is pretty much the opposite of what we naturally are. I pray that you would help us tonight to be honest with ourselves. I pray that we would be open, that we would be able to take something away from this, that we'd be able to learn, that we'd be able to grow. I pray that you'd use this in spite of me, in spite of us, and that you would be glorified in this. In your name I pray. Amen. So first, question number one, or thought number one. Love suffers long. What does this mean? Love waits. Love will put up with quirks. Love will put up with habits. Love will put up with personalities. Someone who is loving is, well, the example that always comes to my mind in this is with brothers and sisters. I have a brother who is just, he has a gift at pushing people's buttons. He's just really good at it. Just poke and poke little things until you just blow up. My brother is really good at that. You may have grown up with somebody like that. So, what is a loving person going to do? They're going to suffer long. They're going to wait. They're going to put up with that. They're going to be patient. They're not going to explode. They're not going to go nuts. They're not going to lash out. This loving person will put up with little things. It can be quirks. Like, this person has this habit that they always do. They always chew on their pen. They always bite their nails. They're always tapping on something, and it just bugs the snot out of me. Someone who is long-suffering is going to be patient. It could be a different personality type. I know for myself, my personality is calmer, more laid back. When someone is real loud and like right in my face, that's hard for me at times. So that's something for me, I have to be long-suffering. I have to be patient and realize that person is not wrong in what they're doing. That person is perfectly well just to be boisterous, to be outgoing, and I'm the one that's wrong to get upset with them and to be annoyed and to go off on them if I do. Love is patient. Love will wait. Love will put up with these different things. So as you look at yourself and give yourself a little score, you can ask yourself, am I patient with the habits, quirks, and personalities of others? When I am wronged, do I react quickly out of anger or revenge? Or do I wait calmly and respond? That's long suffering. That's what love will look like. Someone who is loving will wait, will be patient, will put up with. So how'd you do? Next, love is kind. This seems simple. Love is considerate of everyone else around. When love sees a need in someone else, they will notice that, and they will do what it takes to help. When they see someone, maybe they're just lacking in money for the month. Someone who is kind may help them out. Someone's moving, they may help them out carrying boxes. They've got things to do at home, things are really busy. They may be able to help out, chopping wood, helping them out with different things they have questions with. But love is kind. It's going to be considerate of others. And it's going to be there to help. An often recurring theme with this is, what happens when you're wronged? Love is still kind. To enemies, to someone who has wronged you, a loving person will be kind. They will return with a smile, return with kindness to that person. They're not going to respond to that person in the same way that person did to them. What that does is just makes things worse. It can cause a spiral, if you want to think of it that way, where things aren't going to get any better. Being kind is the opposite. Being kind is the right thing to do. Being kind is the thing that love would do. And doing that will get you out of that spiral. So as you think over what it means to be kind, ask yourself, do I see the needs, feelings, and situations of those around me? Am I considerate of those? Do I help to meet the needs of those around me? When I am wronged, am I kind to that person who wronged me? How many people are like this? How many people have the love to be kind to the person who has wronged them? How many people have the love to see the needs of others and to help out? I actually have been really encouraged by you. You have seen some of little things I need or just kind of assumed I need them, which you're right, because I'm a college kid, I have nothing. So I've been really encouraged by you and the kindness you've shown to me. You make sure I have food when I'm here. You've helped me out with gas money. You do different things to help. So that is showing kindness. And that is a thing that love does. So how do you do? Love does not envy. That's number three. Love is not jealous, but instead, it is content. It does not desire to have what others have, and it does not desire that others don't have what they have. Does that make sense? There are two ways to be jealous. You can either wish you had what they had, or you can wish that what they had was gone, that nobody had it. It could be an attitude that if I can't have it, I don't want him to have it either. You may think, if I can't be happy, nobody's going to be happy. Then I'm content. That is not love. That is quite the opposite. As you might think over yourself and the average person, the normal thing we do is usually the opposite of love. That's our natural state. That's what we are as humans. We do the wrong things. We're bent to be selfish, which is exactly the opposite of love, and unloving. Love does not see the things of others and feel that if I had that, I would be okay. But instead is content with only God. Because God is really all you need. And to be jealous of the things of others is to be discontent. It is to lack love. It's to lack love for that person that you are jealous of. It's to lack love for God. We can be jealous over physical things. You may look at someone else's tractor and be like, I wish I had one of those. Mine would work. Mine keeps breaking down. That one wouldn't, so that would be great. Or it can be abilities that someone may have. You think, that person can sing really well. I wish I could. I can't carry a tune in a bucket. People actually cover their ears when I start singing. We can be jealous over many things. It can even go to the point where someone gets up to sing, or they go out and do their thing on their fancy lawnmower that you wish you had, and you think, I really wish they didn't have that. It would make me happy if that thing blew up right now. Which that is definitely not loving. Or you may think, I would actually smile if that person got laryngitis and couldn't sing. We laugh, but we do this with different things. Maybe not to that extent, maybe not openly to ourselves, but we have thoughts to think, I wish they didn't have that. I wish I had that instead of them. That way, I would get that attention. Or I would be the one to be praised for having such a beautiful voice. Or being able to work a certain job and have the car I want. These are different things that we are jealous of. That is far from love. That is far from being self-sacrificial for the sake of others. So ask yourself, how do I look at the abilities and possessions of others? Do I wish I had the things someone else has? Do I wish that someone did not have the things they do have? How do you do? As we go through this, I just want to say we will all have different areas we struggle in. Maybe depending on different personalities, different struggles, different things that we've grown in. You may struggle in these first things. You may struggle in some of the others. But different people are going to have different areas that they're not so good in. Oh, and I should have said this earlier. You can also maybe do this for the person next to you, if that's your spouse or brother or sister, or that might be fun. But that person next to you might get a 3 in one area, but you're like a 1. But the next area, you might be a 4, and they might be like a 2. So this is going to be something we're all going to have different areas that are struggles for us. Maybe yours is jealousy. Maybe yours is kindness. Maybe yours is number 4. Love does not parade itself. Love doesn't brag. Love doesn't lift itself up for others to see. Love doesn't lift itself up for others to praise. Love doesn't seek to make other people jealous. To show people, hey, I got this thing. Don't you wish you had it too? Or I've gotten really good at this because I practiced really hard and you didn't and you can't do this. What do you think about that? Love doesn't parade itself. It doesn't seek praise. It doesn't seek to be better than others. It doesn't seek to be higher than others. And it's not going to take the things it has, whether you have accomplished something, whether you have earned something, or whether you just are naturally something. You're not going to take that and dangle it over someone's head. To constantly remind someone of a certain position you hold. I am senior executive assistant to the guy in charge. Or whatever it is that you would hold over somebody. Or remind someone constantly, hey, I've got all this stuff. I worked really hard. I've got that car I wanted. To constantly remind people of things you have, of things you've done. This is parading yourself. It is seeking praise. So ask, when I talk to others, do I build myself up? Do I bend the conversation toward me? Do I take whatever they say and make sure the conversation ends up in, oh, you know that one thing I did? Or that one thing I got? Do I seek the praise of others? Is that my goal in a conversation? That I hear them say, good job? Or is that my goal in doing certain things? When I win or do well in something, do I hold it over others? I know we can joke sometimes if we're playing cards or board games and someone wins and families often know who in the family isn't a good winner because that person is going to tell everybody for a long time that they won. Or they might even sit back and analyze how everybody else lost just to rub it in. But love isn't going to brag. It is not going to parade itself. Not only that, Love is not puffed up. That's number five. Love does not think too much of itself. While bragging is something that we do externally, being puffed up is something that's internal. It's a thought of ourselves. To think that we are better than the guy next door. To think that we are better than the guy down the road, the guy we work with. Love realizes that it's just another sinner that God has shown mercy to. Not only that, love realizes that it's just, I've heard it this way, that we are really just piles of dirt that God breathed breath into. Basically. How much worth does that have? How much right does that give us to be puffed up? Love is going to realize that. To realize that we need to be humble. To see that you are not better than the next person. It doesn't matter what you have or what you've done. Your value is no more than that person. You have the same problem everyone else has. That's called sin. That you have the same Savior as everyone else, or all other Christians. And even this, you as a Christian are no better than someone who is unsaved. To look at them and think, if only they had their life figured out like I do. And you stop and think, wait, that doesn't sound quite right, does it? Christians are no better than anyone else. We have just had a God who is merciful, who saved us by His grace, that we didn't earn at all. Or you may think, we do this. I'm an American. I'm better than everyone else. Doesn't matter who. We have many things that we get puffed up over, that we are proud about. But the thing is that love doesn't do that. And this is the one that if you put a four, you're probably not a four. It probably doesn't work. So basically, no one's a four. Ask yourself, do I see myself as better than anyone else? You could also ask, do I see my sins as not as bad as someone else? Next, in verse 5. Love does not behave rudely. Simply, love is courteous. Love is appropriate to the situation. Love is going to do the right thing in all the little things. Love will cause a man to be a gentleman. Love will cause a woman to be a lady. And love will cause children to be respectful. Love will open doors. Love says please and thank you. Love will ask somebody before they borrow something. Isn't it fun when someone tells you, oh, I borrowed that, you can come get it. Like, oh, okay. Love is courteous. It's thoughtful of others. It has manners, you could say. It's going to do the right thing in all those little areas. It's chivalrous, if you want to think of it that way. So the questions could be, am I courteous towards others? Do I place them above me in the way I speak to them, in the way I handle myself in front of them? Do I serve others in the little areas? Do I open the door for mom? Do I go out there and shovel the sidewalk so mom or dad doesn't have to do it? Am I thoughtful of everyone else around me? And also, does my behavior match the situation? Because love is going to be appropriate to whatever's going on. Because you act a certain way, you have a certain demeanor at, say, a church service. And that's going to be a little different than a football game. Your actions are going to be a little different at a funeral than, I almost said wedding, but some people act the same way both places. Some people think those are synonyms. I keep hearing that. It's not going to be the same way at a funeral as it is when you're sitting around playing cards with friends. Love is going to act appropriately. It's not going to be rude. It's going to be thoughtful. It's going to be courteous. So score yourself on that. And we'll move on to the next. Love does not seek its own. Love does not do the things simply for the benefit of itself. Its goal is not to promote itself. It's not going to do the right thing for the wrong reason. Love is not going to do things that are kind, that are thoughtful. It's not going to do things, well, they look kind and thoughtful, do things that look good so that they will look good, so that people will think of themselves in a certain way. It's not going to act like a Christian so other people will think that they are a Christian. It's not seeking its own. When it does things with other people, it's not going to do them just for what it gets out of the deal. It's not seeking its own benefit. That is completely against love, because love is self-sacrificial. So once you start to do it for your own gain, you're going against the very definition of what love is. So love does not seek its own. We're often kind and thoughtful, but for the wrong reasons. Love will do the right thing unselfishly. So ask yourself, am I serving for the right reasons? Am I serving regardless of what I get out of the deal? You could also ask simply, what is my goal? It must not be self. It must be God and others. That is our proper goal. That goal comes out of love, not selfishness. Next, love is not provoked. Love is not irritable. It's not easily offended. A lot of this would actually come from the things that we have covered so far, to think that love is long-suffering. The opposite of long-suffering is easily provoked. Love is going to be kind. It's not going to be provoked to wrath at these people. Love is going to not envy. It's not going to parade itself. It's not going to be proud. And all those things will show up in that it's not irritable, that it's not going to fly off the handle, that it's not going to be someone who is hard to live with. So you can ask yourself, do I respond correctly to the words and actions of others? Which is with love, patience, kindness. You could also ask, am I difficult to live with? You may want to ask the people who live with you. That would help you to see if you are easily provoked. Am I easy to get going? Does it not take much for me to respond in a wrong way? Love thinks no evil. That is our next one. Love does not keep track of the wrongs of others. That's what it means to think no evil. This person is not going to see someone and have a first thought of, oh, that's the guy that wronged me. That's the guy that shorted me $5. Or, that's the guy who can't get it right at work. Or you're not going to see that person, and that first thought is going to be, that's the person who I know is having trouble in their marriage. Love doesn't keep track of the wrongs of others. Often, we have certain people that do kind of irritate us, that we take the time and energy, and it's saddening when we think of how we actually do this, and we keep track. It could even be like a strike system. Like, that's one, buddy. Two more, and I'm coming after you. You may not say it that way, but we do it. Either that, or I'm just really bad, and you're all looking at me like I'm just confessing now. But we do this. It is wrong to keep track of the wrongs of others. When you see someone, your first thought shouldn't be the mistakes they've made. That's not loving. So ask yourself these questions. Is there anyone who I can't look at without thoughts of resentment? Is there anyone that as soon as their face pops up in my mind, I have a sore attitude towards? Do I keep track of a person's strikes before I get back at them? Or before I put them in their place, if you want to say it that way? That is far from love. Love does not keep track of the wrongs of others. Verse 6. Love does not rejoice in iniquity. Love does not rejoice in someone else's failure. Love isn't happy when someone falls. To be loving is to not be happy when someone messes up spiritually. Someone who is unloving may look at another person. This may come out of jealousy, which is definitely not loving. And they think that this person always gets it right. It would actually be kind of nice if they messed up every once in a while. It would be nice if that person wasn't so seemingly perfect. That's out of jealousy. That's selfishness. You're wanting to be more perfect, and you want that person to be less perfect. Love does not rejoice in the sin of others. It is not going to laugh when a brother or sister falls, to think, I knew it was going to happen. Or to think, it's about time. That is so far from love. Love doesn't do that. So you can ask yourself, is there someone I would like to see make a mistake? When another person sins, do I confront them and encourage them as I should? Because that's the correct response to someone falling. Not to smile, not to laugh, not to think it's about time, but to confront, to encourage, to help them, to restore them. That is what love does. Not rejoicing in the falling of others. Next, love rejoices in truth. This means that love will rejoice in the things that are right. It will rejoice in others doing what's right. When someone else is growing as a Christian and they're doing well, you should be happy for them. You should encourage them. That's what love does. Love delights in that. In someone doing the right thing. Love delights in truth itself. In the reading of God's word. In the speaking of truth. They rejoice in what is right. So instead of maybe mocking someone who is a new believer, who is learning and growing, love them. Encourage them. Sometimes a mature believer, maybe not a mature believer, but an older believer, will look at someone who is who's a new Christian and see them kind of flounder, see them make mistakes, but try to change, and he'll just think, you just don't get it. That's such a wrong attitude. That's such a wrong thing. Instead, you should be, I'm glad you're working this through. Here, can I help? Encourage them. Yeah, someone who is growing, who is new, is going to make mistakes. They may not get it. They may not know certain things that kind of go in church. Who knows? They may even sit in your assigned seat in church. Like, come on, buddy. You don't realize how it works here. Come on. But love is going to rejoice in that that person is growing. Instead of going after them for things that they may do wrong, or things that they may make a mistake in. Encourage people who are growing. Rejoice in the fact that they are doing what's right. Even if it's not all the time, but at least in the fact that they're working at it, that they're growing. And even if it is that person that seems to always do what's right, and it just kind of bugs you. You wish that person was a little more human. Rejoice that they are growing. Rejoice that God could use someone with a great testimony like that. So you can ask, do I rejoice in God's truth? Also, do I rejoice in the growth and good testimony of other believers? Verse 7, love bears all things. Now you could say this, that love is going to look beyond mistakes. It is going to bear up under all of the wrongs, all the flaws in another person. Instead of pointing them out and giving up on a certain person, you are going to bear up under them and continue to support, continue to encourage, continue to love. No matter how big the sin, how big the mistake they've made, you still must love them. You still must support them and encourage them to do what's right. It isn't something to where that person has done something so bad that they are beyond hope. You could ask yourself, do I see some people as hopeless? As really not worth the time and effort it would take for me to encourage them? To me to help disciple them? Do I avoid supporting a fellow believer who has made many mistakes? Do you look at someone and think that I'm going to find somebody who is already doing well? That way I don't have much to deal with, I don't have many things to teach them, and it'll all be pretty easy. Love those who are growing. Love those who make mistakes. Do not forget to bear all things. Next, love believes all things. Simply, love is going to believe the best about other people. Love is going to give people the benefit of the doubt. You think of it that way. That your first thought about another person isn't going to be, no, I know what he's saying, but that's not what he means. He's actually trying to do something else. No, low. Love believes all things. That your first thought's going to be, that person said it, so I'm just going to take them at that. Love is trusting. Seems that often, trust is something that we treat as something you earn. But it shouldn't be that way. It says that love believes all things, which means that trusting somebody is where you should start. Not to where I'll trust you as far as I can throw you, or as far as my experience with you goes. But the proper way to love them is to believe them, to take them at their word, Now you may be thinking, but what if they've proven that I can't do that? Well, in some situations you're going to have to be wise and understand that something may not go as this person says. But at the same time, you can't be so concerned with yourself to think that you have to protect yourself. Because one thing about loving is that you open yourself up to hardship. One thing about having a big heart is that you're opening yourself up for other people to wrong you. Especially with something like this, to where you are trusting somebody else. You are taking them at their word. You are beginning relationships at trust rather than building up to it. Because that's what love does. This may seem far from what we usually think, far from what we usually do. That's often how it is, because we're human and we're sinners. But God says that love believes all things. So ask yourself, do I trust others to do what they say? Do I trust others to do the right thing? You could be asking yourself, am I willing to let someone else do something? That could be, am I willing to let them have a part in a certain project? Or am I willing to let them try something on their own rather than let them try a little bit then me take over so it gets done right? Are you willing to trust? To give someone the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes you're going to take a hit. That's part of love. It's part of having a big heart. Next, love hopes all things. Simply, love always has hope. This isn't the thought of, oh, I hope that's going to happen, kind of a wishy type thing. But as a confident expectation of future things. We can have hope because we have a God who can do whatever He wants, who is going to do what He said He's going to do. And then we can know also things like where it says that all things are going to work together for good for those that love God. We can have hope. Love has a confident belief in the future. You are going to think good things towards others. You're going to have hope that this person can change because God has the strength to change them. Or you may think that this can get better because God has the strength to do that. So you can ask yourself, do I believe God will do what He said He will do? Do I have that hope? And our last of this quiz, our last thing to look over is that love endures all things. Your love isn't going to break. Your love is going to stick with it. It doesn't matter what this person does to you. It doesn't matter what your situation is, that you're going to continue to love. As I even said this morning, a lot of this stuff I'm having to think through. I've had to think through for the past few years with a certain girl named Amy, who in 54 or whatever days I will be marrying. And that day we will stand in front of each other and vow to love each other in the thick and thin of all things, whether we have a lot or we have nothing. And we vow that because that's what God expects. Because that's what love is. Love isn't something that has a limit. Love isn't something to where I'm going to love you as far as you treat me well. Or I'm going to love you up until you go through all three of your strikes and then it's done. Love doesn't have a breaking point. It continues. So it doesn't matter if that person wronged you and you are hurt. You continue to love. If nothing else, God tells us, love your enemies. Love isn't going to stop when you have so much going on that you don't have time for someone else. You're kind of missing it. Love has no limit. Love doesn't break under pressure. Love is continual. Now we're all human, we're all going to break. This choice that we have to make to love others, to sacrifice self for the sake of them, is going to break. Because we're human. Then what you have to do is make the choice again. Because we're constantly having to make this choice when we're dealing with other people. Do I love them or do I love myself? And the way you act, the way you portray these things is going to show whether or not you love. This choice is hard. Often. We think of love as something mushy, butterflies and feelings and running slowly to some background music towards somebody. But it is a serious, hard thing. It involves humility. It involves our choice. And it's going to involve work. Something that you are going to have to put yourself into. You're going to have to say no to yourself a lot. I know for me, having a girlfriend, being engaged, has taught me more and more how selfish I really am. And I'm sure those of you who are married would echo that. That a relationship is going to show you how much you really serve yourself, how much you don't actually love somebody else. So make the choice. Sacrifice yourself for the sake of others. Portray this picture that Paul gives us in these few verses. Take the time, take the effort, deny yourself. Humble yourself to the point to that person is more important than me. Love them. Love your God. And take your score. Hopefully you went through that. And look over it. Maybe that's encouraging that you've seen you've grown. But I know for all of us, that'll be able to look at it and see places we need to grow. So love. This morning we saw that love is very important. That it is to be our motive in what we do. And tonight, hopefully you understand a little better of what it looks like. Hopefully you can take this and grow and change. It's going to take work. It's going to take God's strength. And I do really want to urge you to look at this often. Every once in a while in your own personal study, come back to it. Maybe if you're getting in a rut with something else, say, go back to chapter 13 for today or for this week. And go through it. Checklist. Am I doing that? How am I doing in that? Then you can think back, oh, that was pretty bad. That kind of goes completely against that one. You can see where you need to grow. So go home, look over that, pray over that, and hopefully it will be like me, who is every time humbled by this picture of love. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you that you are a great God, that you are the perfect example of love, what it's supposed to look like, how we are supposed to show it to others. Lord, I know we are often such a poor example of love to each other, that we are so bent to serve ourselves, and that we are so bent to do the thing that is exactly the opposite of love. I pray that you'd give us strength. I pray that you would help us in this, that you might even help us to encourage each other in this. I pray that we would be honest with each other, honest with ourselves, to see where we need to grow. Lord, I thank you that you will help us as we seek to change, and that we can know that it is really only about you that we can change. I thank you for that grace, for that patience you show to us. Lord, I pray tonight that we'd go home, that we'd be home safely. Give us a great week to grow closer to you. You be working our own study of your word. In your name I pray. Amen.